Good morning, Havarim. Shalom, Havarim, and hello, friends. Good to see you on the second day of Lent, the first day of daylight saving time. Not a single woohoo in the crowd. Yeah, as I was driving here today, you know, I do the whole thing. You know, some clocks automatically adjust. You know, the cell phones, one in one of our cars automatically changes. Atomic clocks naturally change, it's not natural. But like the microwave didn't change, the old style clocks didn't change, the clock in the Prius that I drove this morning did not change. And I'm driving in this morning, I'm like, I don't even know what time it is, and I think I'm going to be there on time, and then I realize, you know what, I don't even know what day it is. But I'm glad that you have arrived here safely and on time. Maybe you didn't. I don't know. I turned around this way. I didn't see it. So actually, I heard some really interesting scientific data this week. It was a scientific finding, and I know at least one person in this room has already heard this scientific information as well. There was some research that was done to find out what animal, what agent has the highest morality, the highest level of ethics. And they found that the most ethical animal in the world is a fish. And among all the fish, the most ethical among them is the trout. The trout, they find, is actually against all sorts of violence. The trout is against all sorts of war. And you know what you call a trout that is against war? A pacifish. That's... Anyway, maybe I'll shed some light on that for you. Right there, a little more. All right, actually, somebody told me that joke yesterday. It was used at the Bible quiz. Kate didn't even giggle at that. It was used at the Bible quiz yesterday. I wasn't there for the opening, and the guy that was kind of emceeing it all, I believe, told that joke. He probably told it better than I did. And then I helped by taking a friend home yesterday, and she said, the guy that led the opening told a really bad joke, and I thought of you. So anyway, I have promised to try to make this a little more engaging, a little more interactive. I'll have a few more pictures today. I'll have another joke kind of worked in there, more of a pun somewhere along the way. More storytelling today, because I know that we all lost at least 1 hour of sleep today. And we are all moving a little slower because of the cold weather. I also want to say, if there's any children out there that didn't grab one on the way in, we now have the children's bulletins again at the front door. And those bulletins will follow the scripture that Curtis read for us today. So children or adults, if you want to do some coloring, I guess you're welcome to participate as well. Those are all over there. But this week, I was thinking about an event that happened 2 weeks ago. And this, you know, the trout thing that wasn't real, this actually happened 2 weeks ago to this date. So sometime during the pandemic, there was a new Mexican restaurant that opened up in the old Tasty Freeze. Just right down over here. So this is like at the very west side of Gypsy Hill Park. It's called Los Marcos. Los Marcos opened, I don't know, a couple months ago, sometime in the pandemic. I really feel for them. Like, who would open a restaurant during the pandemic? It's got to be a really difficult time. But I really want to see local businesses thrive. I want to see them do well. We had not yet gone to Los Marcos until 2 weeks ago as we're driving past and said, we need to try to support this business in part because it's a half a mile away from my house. And like, I want to be able to walk to get good Mexican food. That's a positive thing in my life, okay? Are you with me so far? Support local business, support my own habit of chips and salsa. So we went after church, we're driving home. I'm not the only one. I saw some eyes raising back there. We're driving home. We go to Los Marcos down here by the park, half a mile away from my home. We want to support this local business. We pull in, and there's one other car in the parking lot. Okay, well, it's still kind of early. It's not quite noon. We go ahead. We go in, and not only is it only one car, it's just one person in there who's not working. It's not like an entire family. It's just one dude. And he's sitting back in the corner all by himself, minding his chips and salsa. My kids have been sitting quietly in church for over an hour, waiting on mom and dad to get out the door because we're always the last ones out. And, you know, finally they get out of church. They're kind of loud. They're kind of rambunctious. We go and we sit in our own little booth and we begin eating our chips and salsa, minding our own business. I see this guy's kind of back there in the corner. He's doing his thing. We're doing our thing. I never lock eyes with him. I never make eye contact. I don't know the guy at all. But at some point he gets up and he leaves. He was there before us. He was done before us. Didn't even think anything of it. Guy was there. He's gone. I'll probably never see him again. We finish our meal. Kids have made a mess. Mom and Dad have been frustrated. We have surely chips and salsa on our clothes and on the floor. Refried beans smeared across the table. And my kids aren't even that young. Still, look, I can write my name in the beans. All of this is going down, and I go up to the counter, up to the cashier to pay. And, of course, this is a woman whose native language is not English, so she doesn't speak English well. And as a side note, I really giggle every time people say, she don't speak good English. She doesn't speak English well. And it takes a few tries until she finally is able to communicate what she's trying to say to me. And after several attempts, I finally understand what she said. She said, your meal has been paid for. My meal has been paid for. You know, you hear about this on the news, right? Somebody that you've never met before pays for another person's meal. Or, you know, the guy at Starbucks pays for the people behind them, gives them a $100 bill. Just like, keep using this until it runs out. Pay for the people behind me. This happens on the news. It happens on social media. It doesn't happen in real life, does it? But here's this guy. Well, sometimes, obviously, never happened to me before. And I started thinking about it. Like, I know I'd sometimes, whenever I'm not in church, like, I dress like a homeless man. because I just do. It's comfortable. I wear old clothes. A lot of stuff is thrift store kind of clothes. But I was wearing my church clothes yet. I had khaki pants on and a dress shirt. My kids still had their church clothes on as well. We didn't look like we were poor, is what I'm trying to say. I know that we weren't overly well-behaved there in the restaurant. He's not like, oh, that nice family over there. Let me just go ahead and treat them today. I have no idea why this guy decided to pay for our meal that day. And there's nothing that I can do to return the favor to him because I don't think I could recognize him. If I met him on the street walking past him, I wouldn't know who he was. I don't remember what kind of car he drove. I can't even just pull into the restaurant if I see his car there again. So what he did was he blessed us by paying for our meal that day, knowing very well that there was nothing that we would ever be able to do to return the favor. Now, the best thing I could do is whenever the waitress said, you know, your meal is paid for, I'm like, well, first thing that comes out of my mouth is, you're getting a good tip today. but there's nothing I can do to return that favor. And it makes me think, as I recall that event, like, what would cause somebody to do that? What happened in his life? Was somebody generous to him that made him pass it on? Or did he come up with really humble roots and realize that somebody helped him along the way, and he's going to go ahead and help other people as well? What formed him to be the kind of person that he was that day? And not only what formed him, how will that story about his generosity form me? And I made sure to tell my children and my wife as we're sitting there in the restaurant and I'm still trying to process just what went on. I made sure to tell the kids that this guy paid for us. I wanted to make sure that they knew about this generosity. I wanted them to know this story so that they could live with it and they could process it. And of course, their question was, well, did you pay it forward? I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Did you pay for the next person's meal? Like, no, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. But now I know. But those stories, how formative are they? And how important is it to remember those stories? Wondering what has formed these people to be the people that they are today, what has formed us into the people who we are today, and how do we pass that on to the next generation? That's what we're going to be talking about today as we look at our scripture from Deuteronomy chapter, 26? Is that right? We'll say yes. Yes, 26, I got it right. Numbers aren't my thing, which is also a book of the Bible. Thank you, Marlene. Anyway, so Deuteronomy chapter 26. Deuteronomy is everybody's favorite book of the Bible, right? Yes, absolutely. So Deuteronomy, no, nobody like just sits down like, I'm going to read Deuteronomy for fun. You read Deuteronomy because that's a part of your ritual, your routine, your practice. And it's a good book of the Bible to read. What it actually is, Deuteronomy is actually two different Greek words that are jammed together. And it literally means second law. Deutero means second. Nomos means law. Now this isn't actually a second law that's given to the Hebrew people. This is the second telling of the law to the Hebrew people. And what's going on in this passage is that Moses is nearing the end of his life and he knows it. Their people are about to cross over into the promised land and he wants to make sure to pass the faith on to the next generations. So if you read through Deuteronomy, you find not only the giving of the law again, you find all of these rituals and these routines, these practices that are meant to share the faith with the next generation. These things that we kind of don't even think about, but they form us into the people that we are. And we find this a couple chapters earlier in Deuteronomy 16. This is the giving of the practice, the festival of the weeks. It's one of those Hebrew holidays that many Christians don't keep today. It says this in verses 9 through 10. The instructions Moses is giving. Count off 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the standing grain. Then celebrate the festival of weeks to the Lord your God by giving a freewill offering in proportion to the blessings the Lord your God has given you. All right, the festival of weeks. Anybody celebrate the festival of weeks here? No, not recently. Maybe you know it better by its Hebrew name. It's called Shavuot. Maybe, yeah, probably not. What's that, Cesar Chavez? Yeah, it must be the mask. I'm not getting on that. Shabbat Chavez is no. That's for the first day of the week for the seventh day for Sabbath. Yes, thank you. Sorry, you threw me when you mentioned the Big Lebowski. It's all Hebrew to me. Anyway, Shavuot is the festival of weeks. Actually, I know you know it better by its Greek name, which is Pentecost. Ah, there it is. 7 weeks from the time you put that sickle to the grain. 7 times 7 is 49. Add 1 is 50. Pentecost is the 50th day. So this is a celebration of the early harvest. Now, I grew up on a farm, so I feel like I know all about farming, so I'm just going to assume you do too. No. Farming, like if you're growing corn you plant in the spring, you harvest it in the fall. Some of the small grains you would plant, like wheat or barley, you plant in the fall, and it grows a little bit, goes dormant in the winter, then grows again in the spring. It's the earliest thing that you harvest. So this first harvest that they're celebrating here with the Festival of Weeks is the wheat harvest. And I promised you more pictures to stay engaged today. I found this one. I thought this was cute. This is an Amish farm, and I have no idea where it is. But the wheat shocks that are stacked there on this farm with no electricity going in or out. So this was the event that's going on here. Moses is laying this out in Deuteronomy 16. And then in our chapter for today, in chapter 26, he gives more detail about how to celebrate this. He gives the liturgy, the readings for the people. And you'll notice that what's going on here, he has them retell the story of their people, the things that God has done for them. Here's just a bit of an outline from this passage. They start by reaffirming this statement. It says, a wandering Aramean was my father. Who was that? Any guesses? That was Jacob, also known as Israel. Yes. So this wandering Aramean, this is the guy that he had these sons, and one of them went down to Egypt, and he sent back all this food during this period of plenty, and then this period of famine came along. And this wandering Aramean and his family, they were hungry, they were starving, so they went down to see his son Joseph, and they received this food. They're retelling this story about how his father, this person, this ancestor of all these people, was a wandering Aramean, homeless and hungry. He goes down to Israel, he goes down to Egypt, and there the people of Israel grow in number and they grow in power. And the book of Exodus tells us why this happens. The Israelites are enslaved because Pharaoh is scared because these people are growing in number. Now they're outnumbering us. They're powerful. They're strong people. So he enslaves them. Then we talk about this liberating action of God. God brings the people out of Egypt, out of captivity, and then eventually brings them into the promised land. So when they are celebrating the Festival of Weeks, when they have this first fruit harvest, when they're gathering their grains, their wheat, their barley, they save back the first portion of that. They bring it to the Lord. They lay it at the foot there in the temple, and they repeat the story of how God has blessed them each step of the way. And then as they lay that down there at the foot of the altar, they say these words, "And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, Lord, have given me." Now you see, they have an abundance. They have a lot of grain. Things are going extremely well for them. And Moses is telling the people, when these things happen, when you find yourself overflowing with goods, remember where you came from. Now, have you heard that phrase before? Remember where you came from? I mean, it's a simple phrase. Remember where you came from. And you're like, well, I came from home like half an hour ago. What are you talking about? No, like usually you hear this phrase like when a kid is ready to move out of the home and they're getting like their first real job. And their parents, they're kind of teary-eyed. They say to their kids, remember where you came from. Or maybe you think of that kid that like you went to high school with or you grew up with and you made mud pies with them growing up. And like there's this guy that used to eat glue over there. I didn't mean to make eye contact with you, Ed. Not sure that you... Ed used to eat glue. No, like there's that kid, like now he's like wearing Versace and he's driving a Ferrari or something like that. And like, that's the guy that used to make mud pies. He used to eat glue. And like, dude, remember where you came from. Or often we hear it associated with somebody that came from really humble origins, like really dirt poor. And they say, you know, I just want to give back to my community. I'm trying to remember where I came from. And sometimes we even hear it in the negative. Don't forget where you've come from. And this is a recognition that, you know, people work hard. Don't hear me saying anything other than that. I believe that a lot of people do work really hard. The people that are successful today are people that have put in the time, put in the effort. I mean, some people were given like a silver spoon when they're born. I get that. But a lot of people do work really hard. But we also need to recognize that there's a lot of people that work really hard who don't make a lot of money, who are barely getting by. Again, I grew up on a dairy farm. I know what it's like to work, you know, 12 hours a day and still barely get by, you know. And don't blame daylight saving time on the farmers. They work sun up to sundown no matter when that clock says it is. But the point that I'm trying to make is that we all know that, yes, important to work hard, but there's a lot of things that go into making somebody successful. And I remember the story of the post turtle. Are you familiar with post turtles? Post turtle. So the farmer is walking along his fence line one day, and he comes to a turtle sitting on a fence post. And the thing is that we're all kind of turtles sitting on fence posts. We didn't get there on our own. I know, I got distracted there. We're all kind of like the turtle on the fence post. We didn't get where we are on our own. There have been people along the way that have helped us get to where we are. The turtle didn't climb up there. You got that, Katrin? I'm not advocating for it. You would tell them stop. All right. All right, I was trying to use it as a cute illustration with an animal involved, and, you know, the turtle didn't get there on its own, neither did the person who's successful. You got that point? There's also a different way that they flip it with politicians, and they say, you know, remember politicians, you didn't get on that fence post by yourself, and, you know, sometimes you feel bad for the poor sucker, you just want to help them get off. That's also another twist on it, but that's not where I was going. You got me distracted. I'm sorry. The point that I'm making is the successful people, if you have things, if you have an abundance of grain like these people coming to the Lord on the Festival of Weeks, remember you didn't get there on your own. Now, I realize that many people, myself included, when things aren't going well, that's the easiest time to pray. When I am sick or when somebody in my family is hurting, it's really easy to ask for prayers in those moments. I've never had to go hungry. I've never had to be homeless. But I'm told and I assume that in those moments when you are hungry, when you are homeless, when you're thinking about where your next meal will come from, whether or not you will have food for your family or be able to put clothes on their back, that probably is an extremely easy time to pray. Like they say, there's no atheists in foxholes. In the midst of your needs, then it's easy to pray. But I think what we're hearing today in this passage is that we need to remember, even in the good times, how we got to where we are. Whenever we have plenty, do we give thanks? When we have a home to live in, clothes on our back, do we remember who got us where we are today? Do we remember the people in our life who have formed us into the individuals we are, the people who have provided for us along the way, whether that be physical or spiritual or sustenance or education or whatever it might be? Do we take the time to remember how we got where we are today? Deuteronomy is a reminder that everybody, no matter what you have, the successes that you've had in life, remember that God has been there each step of the way. Again, verse 10. These are the words you say. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, Lord, have given me. Now I say that recognizing that not everything goes well for us. It's really easy to stand up here and say, you know, whenever things go well, give thanks to God. But I also realize that today is March 13th. And, of course, because it is March, I do have a March joke. Wait for it. I know it's a little grainy. You're thinking about it. Oh, look, John, another pun. What is it? A spring. Where is it? Just around the corner. Spring is just around the corner. It's not the same if you have to explain it, I know. This is my way to keep you engaged today. Anyway, March 13th. Actually, this day, not only is spring just around the corner, in spite of how it may feel, I also realize that this date is the exact date when the pandemic got real for me. Tate shared some information about his own experience on March 12th. You're a day ahead of me. I'm always a day late and a dollar short, something like that. For me, the reality of the pandemic hit me on March the 13th. On March 13th, 2020, I was with some friends, and we were away from home. We were out. So many of my stories involve us eating. We were out together eating in a restaurant. You guys remember doing that, like, with people? Oh, good days. We were with someone else, another family, when I got a phone call from Glenn. And 2 years ago on this day, you were driving back from your golf trip. And as I received this phone call from Glenn, of course, we've been hearing stories about this novel coronavirus and things that were happening and things that were shutting down. Tournaments, basketball tournaments were being canceled. Schools were going to be closed for a period of time. Well, in this conversation with Glenn 2 years ago to this date on March the 13th, 2020, Glenn and I made the decision, an executive decision, that we were going to pause in-person church for 2 weeks to let this thing die down. You're so naive, Glenn. we did pause it for 2 weeks. That's right. And it was just funny, like that morning, I got a phone call or a text from the person who was scheduled to do the nursery that day. And she said, you know, I don't think that we can come. And I'm like, wait, come on. Like, really? This is going to blow over. No big deal. Then that evening, we're closing down church for 2 weeks. And now it's been 2 years. I also realized that as we began Lent last week, so Lent, last year, 2021, I began having these small Lenten devotional times on Wednesday mornings at like 7:30 a.m. And part of that was very intentional, knowing that not many people would come at 7:30 a.m. We know we could keep the crowd small at that time. So that was 1 year ago during Lent that each week about 10 people came 7:30 in the morning. Then after Easter 2021, that's when we started meeting in person in this congregation, and we started dividing the congregation up, and we had AM services and AM early services and later services. It was like a 9:30 service and a 10:30 service. Anybody remember those days? I remember, you know, it felt kind of like snooty, like big church kind of thing. Like oh, I come to the early service at Stanton Mennonite Church. People were signing up, which service are you coming to, the morning service or the later service? So as I was thinking this week about this passage, I realized that those events, you know, that Lenten devotional time, those divided congregational times, that was only a year ago. I'm like, that was a year ago. That was less than a year ago. And like, we are in month 37 of 2022 here. Like, it feels like it's just dragging on. And I'm just simply noting that things don't always go well. You know, hard work isn't a guarantee that things are going to go well. Praying with all your heart doesn't always make things go well. But I think that this story also tells us what to do in those times. Remember, this story tells a story about slavery in Egypt as well. Well, this past week, actually a week and a half ago, I did have lunch with a friend. My third lunch story for today. Are you hungry yet? You've been hungry all along? All right. I am a mandatory reporter. If you're not feeding your child, I have to... Anyway, so this past week I was having lunch with my friend Les Horning. And Les is actually going to preach here in a couple weeks. He is a trained pastor. He served as a pastor for a number of years. He now works for Mennonite Central Committee, MCC. He's involved in donor relations. So he's going to share here in a couple weeks. Very capable man, very, very intelligent. He not only did an MDiv at Eastern Mennonite Seminary, he went on to do some PhD studies in Old Testament. So wise dude, perhaps overthinks things a little bit. You know those kinds of people? I didn't mean to look at anybody in particular. Mirror right here. So I sat down and had lunch with Les and just had some good conversation. Good to catch up with a friend. You know what that's like. And I've known some of Les's struggles over the pandemic. Les is a 50-something-year-old healthy guy, by all means. He's got two young adult daughters. One of them recently was married. And his wife and he live in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And during the pandemic, when everything shut down, including his gym, Les was looking for some way to try to stay in shape. So he started walking every day. And where he lives on kind of the western side of Harrisonburg, he borders some farmland. So his routine would be every day to go out on the farm lane and walk. And he began taking pictures of the things that he saw. And he is a creative sort, so he would take these pictures, post them on Facebook, and every day he would write a haiku. I'm not a real haiku fan, I'm more of a limerick guy, but this is kind of the thing that Les would do. He would capture pictures of the sunrise, because he's an early morning riser. He would capture pictures of the changing seasons. He would capture pictures of just like discarded things people thought they no longer needed and just kind of threw off there. I remember a picture of a toy that he assumed somebody had dropped, some kid had dropped from their stroller as they were being pushed along this farm lane. And with each one of those, he captures his emotions in the form of a haiku. So we find things like this. This is a picture of the sunrise over Massanutten, taken from February of this year. He says, "There's pain and freedom, yet an exquisite growing seeps down in my soul." So we see a lot of themes coming out, a lot of themes of hope, a lot of themes of promise, a lot of themes of new life. Again, we see the changing seasons, fallen dreams light up, not lost, rather rearranged, a new tapestry. Hope and rearrangement and new beginnings. But it's not just the good things. You know, sometimes he looks to spiritual things as well. It's not just the things of his nature. You know, jumped in with both feet, soul first, into today's dream. There's rooms for your feet as well. But as Les is documenting his feelings, this he began in May of 2020, he begins noticing that he's having a hard time breathing as he's walking around. And he's 50-something years old, so he starts thinking, you know, is this just a part of getting older? You know, is it just because I haven't been able to get physically in the gym and take care of myself? And like anybody else, what are you going to do, guys? You're going to rush right to the doctor as soon as you notice you're having a hard time breathing? No, you put it off a little bit longer, thinking it might get better. But it gets worse. It gets worse. So finally he goes into the doctor, and they do the x-rays, they do the CT scan, they do all the blood work, and find out that he has stage 3B, non-small cell cancer in his lung. And that's a mouthful. I said it for the one person here who might know what that means. But you know, stage 3B is not necessarily a good thing. This is a lifelong non-smoker who just, for some strange reason, develops this carcinoma in his upper lung. And he continues to document as he's walking around. He's taking these pictures on his cell phone. And you notice that some days are really upbeat. And you notice some days are really down. You see the dreary pictures, the muddy lane, the cloudy skies. He still finds moments of hope and moments of despair. Love's not out of reach, though far beyond my knowing, close to my being. At one point, Les has this reaction to the drugs that he's receiving. He undergoes chemotherapy and radiation, and he takes his endeavors, his practice, and he takes them with him into the hospital room. And it's a little harder to read, but on day 3 in the hospital, day 3 of, I think, 6, sterile lines, darkness, light, and lively sustenance, there is hope somewhere. He can barely see the feeding bag. He had to have a feeding tube for those 6 days. And he continues to write, and he continues to document, he continues to look, he continues to see, he continues to find, he continues to be questioning all along. And here's another one. He sees hope. He sees these beautiful flowers as they're bursting forth. Should I walk on by and not breathe in your beauty? I can't count the loss. The reason I tell this story, and I did ask Les's permission to share his story, is because along the way, he has his highs and he has his lows. He has his good days, he has his bad days. He has his suffering, he has his joys. But each step of the way, he's looking to notice the things that are around him. He's taking the extra time to pause and take it all in. And I am happy to say that... Well, you know the story. I wouldn't be meeting with him if he wasn't doing all right. So he had his last chemotherapy a year ago in December. And the exact words given to him by his doctor just before I met with him last week was that there was no evidence of new metastatic disease. Doctors would not say you're cancer-free. It's a little soon for that, but we're taking that as a positive thing. Now, as I sat with Les, you know, he overthinks things. And he says to me, Kevin, I hesitate to say that God healed me. I'm like, all right, let's get a second cup of coffee. Tell me more, because that can go any which way. Like, what do you even mean by that, Les? He explained to me that the reason he's hesitant to say that God healed him, because if he says that God heals him, that necessarily means that God didn't heal someone else. And when you go for chemotherapy, when you go for radiation, you're building relationships with people there in the hospital, with people receiving the same treatment. And the people that he didn't share a bed with, but shared you know, the hospital with, not all of them got to go home. So he's hesitating to say that God healed him. And I fumbled through some sort of response for him at the time. And I wish I would have had a little more time to think about it. If I could have thought about it, I probably would have said something like this. I would have said, you know what, Les? I do think God healed you. And I don't think it's wrong to say that. I do think it's wrong to say that God healed you because X, Y, Z. I do think it's wrong to give a reason for why God chose to heal you. If you were to say God chose to heal you because of your robust prayer life or your strong faith, that necessarily means that God didn't choose to heal this other person because they didn't have as much faith, because they didn't have the prayer life. But that doesn't mean that God didn't heal you. We don't know why God does certain things in some people's lives and not in others. But I do believe that God does work through prayer. You can say amen. I do believe God works through prayer. I do think that God works through medical personnel. I do believe that God works through science. I do believe that God had been working for years on developing cancer drugs that helped Les survive his cancer. I do believe that God works through community, through a group of people who can support him through this difficult time, a time when so many of us are feeling isolated, that his community can come together even through social media and the pictures that he's posting and sharing and show support for a person. I do believe that God can move through all these different avenues to heal a person, not only physically, but emotionally and spiritually. I do believe that God has healed Les. And I do believe that God has healed many of us as well. Sometimes all we need to do is slow down and notice the things around us. To take the example of Les, to notice the things that many people have discarded, the things that people have overlooked and passed by. I came across this quote by John Newsom in his commentary on Deuteronomy. Newsom says that Deuteronomy knows that when a people forgets its past, it loses both its present and its future. We all are inheritors of a story, a great story, a divine story, and a wandering Aramean was our father. We are a part of the history of the church. And it's really easy to look at our own lives and kind of look at the things that really happened that are good and say, yeah, I did it. I did it all on my own. And it's really easy whenever things are bad to ask questions. And I get all that. But when we look at the history of the church, we see God's activity among us each step of the way. Sometimes we just have to slow down to see it. Well, during Lent, I'm closing our sermon time with a litany of response. I'm going to invite you to join me in this prayer of confession. Again, it comes from Isaiah 55. It's nearly the same as last week's, with a word or two changed each week as we change our focus. So I will read the leader part, if you will please join me for the people part. Holy One, we seek you while you may be found. Have mercy on us, O God, for our thoughts are not your thoughts, and our ways are not your ways. As we walk with Christ on this Lenten journey, help us see your way more clearly and follow your way more faithfully. Please join me in prayer. God, you are our light and our salvation. You are the stronghold of our life. Of whom shall we be afraid? We seek a home in you. We seek a heart of curiosity. We seek an eye for beauty. Grounded in you, sheltered by your wings, you reveal a world unfolding in layers of love. That we will suffer in this journey, before us, our consent to your way of compassion makes us strong. Continue to gather us, O God, as we seek your path. Amen. This brings us to, not that yet, this brings us to, now I lost my order of service. Yes, let's go ahead. This brings us to our time of reflective music. And during the pandemic, we have been sharing a video of music. And just a little update on where we are going as a church. I noted in the email, I gave you a little teaser that we're going to be adding some things back to our services. In April, I plan to begin children's time again. All right. Kids are excited about that. My daughter actually asked, Dad, when are we doing kids' time again? I said, we'll get back to that. And then it's a small crowd here, so I'll keep it, let's keep it in-house. It's a secret. On Easter Sunday morning, if there's no more COVID cases around here, if we're kind of keeping things down the lowdown, we're going to try singing again. Yay! Congregational singing! Now we're going to stop the live stream so not everybody...